This is AVXL episode 22, recorded August 12th, 2016.
Testing, 1, 2, 3. All right, I'm not blowing anything out.
Ignorant weasels chewing on your soul. Ignorant weasels. Do you have speed?
Yeah.
Welcome to AVXL, your guide to the best in home theater gear and content, no matter what your budget is. Oh my goodness, we've got Olympic color debates, Minecraft coming on the Oculus Rift, NHK, is it really broadcasting at 8K in Japan? What's going on with the KS9800, and a beautiful stack of viewer questions. Welcome to AVXL, I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, and I'm Robert Herron.
We have launch dates. We have conference dates for Sony's new PlayStation 4.5. That's going to come on September 7th, the same day as the new iPhones. And, I'm still getting over the fact that I didn't know the new Xbox actually had UHD Blu-ray built into it.
Sure
last
does.
Week. That was just troubling me.
Except that you... I'm thinking of the poor Vizio owners right now, and I'll talk about that in a minute for their UHD experiences and what you can or cannot connect to that TV currently. But... my question really is, are they changing the name on it? Is it still like a PlayStation 4 device? Is it going to be, are they going to call it the PlayStation 4.5? It's probably not Neo, I'm guessing. Either way, I'm glad. It'll be the, if I'm buying a new console, that's the one I'm looking at because of 4K support. Better have some of the best ultra-high def Blu-ray playback. Considering that the PS3 was such a great Blu-ray player
right.
for so long and still is, I mean, it's a beast of a box, but I'm hoping the PS4 kind of takes up that mantle of just a quality disc player, given it's a game console, too. But I'm looking forward to it. So September 7th, yay. I may spend more money on that day. But
not
I am,
the Xbox One S, though?
I'm kind of done with that. I'm done with the Xbox all over. It's not my platform.
Okay.
There's too many first-party titles that Sony has that right. I have to play.
I mean,
like Uncharted and a few others that are only available there. And it's just like, the Uncharted series alone.
You're obsessed with Uncharted.
Uncharted's cool, but also, what do you call it, with Snake. I can't even think of the name of the game now. And I played like all four of them, or five of them. Metal Gear Solid. Thank you. Another epic game that's only available on PlayStation. And there's just enough of those titles to where I'm just like, okay. Otherwise, I'm a PC gamer, so, you know. Yay, welcome to 4K.
I'm just excited that No Man's Sky is now available. So No Man's Sky is a really crazy sort of space exploration game. And part of what makes it so crazy is that it, one, is gorgeous. It looks absolutely gorgeous. You're exploring and surviving in a, quote, infinite procedurally generated galaxy, right? Launched on PlayStation 4 a few days ago. Launched on the PC worldwide this morning and apparently just stomped Hello Games servers to the point where Hello Games is now bringing on board a Q&A team that's actually larger than the entire development team.
Yay! Popular.
You know, quote, the number of people, players, and length of average PlayStation has been far more than our small team could have anticipated. That said, we're working quickly to adapt. But if you haven't seen it, no-mans-sky.com is the website.
Oh,
they've
cool.
got videos up on they've got videos up on YouTube, and it's just, you know, it's gorgeous. It's not gorgeous in the super detailed kind of sense, but in the color choice and the aesthetics, and people are just obsessed with it.
It looks cool. I mean, I've heard little grumblings here and there about because of the procedurally generated world, it makes it very difficult for you to actually hook up with a buddy or something.
Right.
And other issues like that, but otherwise, and of course, like all games, major patch on day one. That whole concept of going gold is just that I don't think that ever really existed.
Right. Well, OpenGL,
but cool though.
Yeah, you know,
it's... more beautiful pixels I can unleash on some of these new TVs I'm looking at.
Oh my goodness! So it's exciting. I don't know. Congrats to the Hello Games team. You're getting my $60, and for me to pay $60 for a game, like the week it ships, is a sign of epic and intense desire on my part. Foxconn officially owns Sharp, $3.8 billion. Foxconn's Terry Gao tries to get to turn the Sharp brand around. Sharp, of course, got in trouble when they didn't realize that they just weren't going to make as much money as they used to off screens. The rumor, according to the Wall Street Journal, or the story, is that there's going to be a lot of Sharp branded stuff from Foxconn. Going to be a big cultural battle, I think, between Sharp and Foxconn. Well, probably won't be much of a battle. It'll be a shock, and then you'll either be there or you won't. But
let's hope that they put some of the incredible facilities that Sharp built for building LCD panels. They built some state-of-the-art facilities right when the market tanked, and it never really recovered from that. So they were just selling space on their floors for pennies on the dollar, and that really hurt them a lot in the long run. Because for the longest time, the cheapest way to get the cost of these LCD panels down was just that mother glass, the original bed-sized sheet of glass that gets carved up into all the panels they make. The bigger you can make that, the efficiencies kick in, and the costs come down. So Sharp just kept, every year, it's like, oh, we're another meter larger than last year, and great. And they had these Gen 10 facilities when everyone's doing like 8 or 9 at the most. Right. And then the economy tanked, and then it was just one thing after another. So good. I'm glad Foxconn is in there. May they bring their automation skills. If you've never actually seen that last facility that Sharp bought, it's in Japan in Sakai City, and it is, I think, 100% water efficient.
Wow.
State of the art for solar cell and LCD production, because they're very similar technologies when it comes down to the manufacturing side of it. But it's at the time, and this is like 5 years ago.
Right.
State of the art. And I was just like, so hopefully all that stuff
starts
getting put to good use.
Apparently Foxconn's had some success sort of cooperating one of Sharp's facilities and increasing efficiencies and making a little bit more money out of it.
Foxconn's been bringing in the robots too for their own manufacturing to help, alleviate. And if you've ever worked a manufacturing job before for 10 hours a day.
Yeah.
I say bring in the robots.
Yeah. it's tough, right? Because a lot of people, there's also, a lot of people who worked sort of a light manufacturing job 30 years ago don't really understand just exactly how, quote, efficient, unquote, it has gotten, which is a polite way of saying eliminating all opportunities for conversations, mistakes. It's intense. It's a pretty scary environment
and
to work in.
It's a little
in.
Confusing for this story as well, because we were talking about an episode or two ago about Le Echo, I believe it was, that purchased the Sharp TV side. Or no, I'm taking that back.
Le Echo purchased Vizio.
Yep.
So, oh my goodness, Minecraft is launching on the Oculus Rift next week. That's all I need to say about that.
Okay. I have been using the Gear VR for some of the Olympic coverage that's available, and it is, it really gives you a taste of some of the interesting, cool things you can do with that in particular, and I look forward to seeing that. My only complaint about the current state of VR is the limited resolution. I mean, it is kind of the technology's in its early states.
Yes.
So, fidelity-wise, I'm used to staring at 4K stream. I'm looking at two 4K screens right now, streaming 4K Olympics, and I'm not seeing that in my headsets yet.
No.
But
you won't for a long time.
But the cool stuff is just that ability to look around. In being in a fixed point in an environment and being able to look around is pretty neat, I think. And I watched the opening ceremonies, and just being able to flip your head, look up at the fireworks, look back down at the crowds, look around. I instantly wanted a 360 camera in the pools so I could just freedom of view look around, do that as a live event. And I'm sorry they didn't do that this time around. I think they could have did at least one live VR thing, and because everything right now is after the fact. You download the NBC app, and you basically can stream the VR content through there into the Oculus app for Samsung and stuff like that. But I could see this being a big thing, and it does. I am still kind of laughing the fact that I probably have looked at more VR for this Olympic event for the Rio 2016 games than I have in 4K, but that's a different story. How are they creating that 4K for the Olympics? That is what I'm finding interesting.
Yeah, so that brings us to a question from Chris, who wrote in, with NHK technology, Japan is broadcasting in 8K with 22.2 channel surround. Is that actually going to be the future of television, or is it a demonstration technology? I'm not sure I'd call what NHK doing is broadcasting exactly. They have a single channel off of a satellite that's doing 4 and 8K. Nobody really has NHK's super high vision 8K technology you know, in time for Rio.
I mean, they're 8K screens, but where are you getting that feed?
Well, okay,
and
so
if you're doing it over a satellite broadcast.
If you want to watch, like, the 8K Olympics, my understanding is you can go to, between the 6th and the 22nd, you can go to the Tokyo 8K theater, or you can go to the Osaka 8K theater.
Awesome.
And as far as you know, there's nowhere else to see it unless you're inside of NHK. I could be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure I'm right about that one.
I think you're dead on that one.
What's interesting about this particular Olympics broadcast in terms of the 4K stuff is it's all being Rio's being shot in HK, and then NHK is processing it down to 4K and distributing it on behalf of NBC is my basic understanding of what's going on, because right now NHK, they are, come hell or high water, going to cover the Tokyo 2020 or the 2020 Tokyo Olympics in 8K. Which means they have to completely resolve the entire, production stream, from the cameras to, moving the bits around, to compressing everything and dealing with all the audio and the sound and the editing and the switching. So they're treating the Rio as sort of the dress rehearsal for their whole technology.
And that has been my experience exactly. Between the apps on the TVs, it's a mishmash of crap. This Comcast Xfinity app is frankly horrible.
Right.
And it should have been something like an NBC app.
Yeah, well, it's horrible
across all platforms.
So are they basically rebroadcasting NBC in 4K on the Xfinity app, or is Xfinity?
There's a handful of content, and then the original plan was a day or two after the broadcast, it would then be available in 4K through streaming services on select platforms.
Could that be an internal battle, like, the Comcast engineers and the NBC Universal engineers fighting over who gets to have the Olympics name? Because they're owned by the same company.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I mentioned this too, but Comcast took an old sampler app from 2 years ago and has repurposed this for the current Olympic coverage. So it is using an old app that I find is either prone to not working at all for some people. And of course, I'm finding on the 2016 TVs, they work a lot better than the 2015 TVs. And that mishmash, and I have a 2015 Ultra HD TV with the app installed, and it never plays any of this content. So it is truly, you're not seeing anything live in 4K for this Olympics, but they're doing the capture in 8K. They're doing the processing to 4K. And they're getting that, I think, really hammered out so that it had better be available as a live event come the next round of the Summer Games.
I'm really curious about, I mean, I'm sure 4K, at that point, so by the 2020 Summer Games, 4K will either be standard.
Netflix will be streaming the Olympics.
And that's an interesting question, right? Well, NHK's got the 2020 Olympics, but it's going to be really, really interesting to watch, right? Because we're pretty sure that 4K is not 3D and that 4K will survive, right? We've got UHD Blu-ray support. We've got streaming support. We already have more
color
4K. Yeah, we already have more 4K than we ever had 3D. So the question is how will live television catch up and how long will it take, right? Because, the nightmare for broadcasters of trying to adopt 3D for sporting events is they would basically have to double the number of cameras on every ped at every stadium at every event, which is bad enough at, a baseball stadium where they're running, 15 cameras?
Yeah. They could pretty much have 4K cameras.
Right.
You could shoot the live events.
Well, I'm saying, 4K, a lot of them actually probably already have 4K cameras. They just don't use the 4K capability.
Exactly.
Yet, right?
Yeah.
One of the fun things about going to NAB is realizing that how much those cameras cost and how far ahead they try to buy those cameras or in terms of the technology. But, I think it's going to be interesting to see if 4K, they need 4K, they'll need 4K trucks for the Olympics. They will need, they will need to actually be able to switch.
And did you get that live, especially if the TVs aren't and your cable and satellite providers aren't able to deliver that in a live environment, then it's all going to be streamed. And then hopefully it won't be too delayed next time around. Mm-hmm. And I think as far as the delivery of 4K, I'm just hoping they don't go with this random mishmash of apps again. I hope it just becomes solidified around somebody who knows what the hell they're doing when it comes to delivering 4K streaming, which there are a couple of companies out there,
you know,
Amazon and Netflix, that are doing it, have been doing it for months.
It's a shame that that NBC didn't produce a 4K app for this Olympics, but they probably, I don't think they particularly care.
To give NBC credit, their sports app, NBC sports app for this Olympics is frankly the best way to watch the Olympics.
Right.
It is just epic. You have all the live events. You do need a login for a subscription service, but there's you can share with friends and family. And they also provide all of the day's coverage, mm-hmm. as well as an archive of all the events. So if you miss something, just download that app. I stream it right to a Chromecast, and I absolutely love it. And I have watched very little live or broadcast coverage that way.
So I need is an app on my phone and a cable account that I'm never going to buy.
True. But I will also say the announcers on the streaming services are on NBC streaming content are 100x better than the folks I hear talking on TV too. So they seem more versed to the event and more versed with the variety of athletes that are participating and providing you a more well-rounded coverage compared to, frankly, some of the nonsense coverage at least as far as the announcers go on TV.
It's amazing the difference an announcer can make.
So, thank you, NBC, for providing that awesome streaming app. The only thing it's missing is the 4K part.
Or the ability for me to get it without subscribing
that
to Comcast
too. And
cable.
For that, at least I think Comcast allows, like, you can share your login with up to 5 people simultaneously. So
I just need to knock on my neighbor's door and ask them if they have cable.
I asked my roommate. So
I'll be curious if
just so I can test it all out on everything. So.
Yeah, I'll be curious if 8K turns into one of those sort of Japan only kind of specs, because apparently not along with the Olympics, you're doing a bunch of arts and entertainment programming on this satellite channel.
Well, I mean, you're gonna need sensors to capture. Yeah. I mean, they'll have 16K sensors soon, and that's great.
But what I'm saying in terms of 8K distribution,
that's
a lot of people never realize how many technologies are amazing in Japan. But like, there is entire generations of phones that everybody, because, you know, they replace stuff constantly in Japan, that were available in Japan that never saw uses anywhere else in the world.
Like, oh, totally.
It's curious to watch.
And this is an 8K experiment of theirs. They're like, okay, we're doing live production and capture. We're throwing it across the satellite system and back. And we're having these two live events, hopefully they're live events, at the two theaters you mentioned that actually had 8K projectors. And I wonder if they're using dual 4K projectors for that. I'd be curious to know on the projection setup actually how they're working that. But I'm willing to bet that's going to be one of the very finest video displays of Olympic content.
Yeah.
And if you're in Japan, I would definitely hit that up.
So, Robert, you are currently monitoring. We're looking at 4K streaming on two 4K televisions right now, last year and this year, Samsung.
Yeah, the top of the lines from this year and last year right now.
And what's interesting about that is we're seeing two radically different one much brighter and one much darker.
It's interesting. And I would say this is to the setup and also the difference in the content. We're looking specifically at that Xfinity streaming 4K app.
That irritates you
so sampler,
much.
The sampler app that you can pull some Olympic coverage up on. Mostly a bunch of judo and swimming. And the
nothing wrong with judo and swimming. It looks gorgeous, but what's interesting about that is in one case you have what basically amounts to, it looks like someone turned the brightness down on the screen.
The new TV is different in terms of when we look at the pool scenes for swimming, the water is much bluer. And the overall brightness of the picture, even though the new 9800 is capable, I've measured in excess of 1300 nits on that thing, 30 to 40% brighter than the TV next to it.
Right.
It still doesn't, there's something wrong with either the playback of the content. Mm-hmm. And that's where this is such a hard demo to even do a valid comparison with, because I'm looking at two TVs that are different, although well calibrated each, but the software on both, the playback software, this Xfinity app is actually different on the 2016 and 15 TVs. And then what was the content optimized for? They probably picked one set to optimize the picture quality for this particular stream.
Right.
So I'm wondering if that plays into it at all. I definitely can't use this as reference material because, I wasn't at the Olympics. I couldn't tell you what the real color was, at least according to my perception. And then B, I'm going to stick to things like ultra-high def Blu-ray for the time being, because that way I have test material and things I can actually run through those playback devices and measure and see where that's hitting rather than subjective video content that I'm uncertain of how it was produced. And without a doubt, even though this is 4K, it is highly compressed. So we're seeing, in this Olympic coverage anyway, definitely some compression artifacts and mm-hmm. things like that. And I also see that in the 1080p stream I'm getting from NBC as well.
Right.
And particularly in dark scenes or where, like, for the foil and saber matches, it's usually on a well-lit strip of platform that they're competing on, and the background is really dark. And you just see the compression go to hell on that. As anybody who watches Game of Thrones a couple episodes back where they had some nighttime scene where that wasn't compressed very well either, and very similar. So I'm finding for the KS9800, Samsung's new TV interface on all their new 2016 TVs, at least for the 7 series on up, so much faster and easier to use. That to me, the usability of the TV is so much better in terms of universal control, mm-hmm. performance of switching between apps, the resumption of an app, like, oh, I was in the middle of watching Netflix and I fell asleep last night, so I just turned the TV off. You literally turn the TV back on, one button, it immediately starts back up where you left off. And those little usability things I just absolutely love. We talked about some of those picture quality differences from the JS9500. I'm still exploring that, and that's specifically just related to something I could show on both screens at once, that Olympic coverage. Definitely has the greater peak brightness. And I have to say, ultra high def Blu-ray is freaking awesome looking. I am a fan of the color, even though I fully understand that the format will get updated with dynamic metadata down the road later this year. That should improve picture quality even further. Mm-hmm. And my big question there will be, will players be able to update the software to add that functionality to the titles that can do it? Nice. Or will be updated? Or are you going to have to buy your movie again in HDR10 dynamic metadata mode?
Not so nice.
That's a future question. well, later this year anyway. And speaking of HDR10, the good folks at Vizio have pushed that update for their P&M series TVs. If your TV hasn't automatically updated, you can, quote-unquote, force it, at least trigger the update function, and then the TV has to be off or in standby mode for that to be received, processed, and done. If the TV gets turned on in the middle of it, it will basically delay that update process. But once you have that new software, greater than version 20 at this point for right. you Vizio P and M series owners, you now have specific UHD support for a couple of Blu-ray players, ultra high def Blu-ray players, namely the Samsung UBD K8500 and one other player. I think it's the Philips one that's available right now. Effectively, Vizio is adding per device support for these TVs. It isn't just any ultra high def HDMI 2.0 device is going to work. I'll be really curious to see if something like the Roku is currently compatible, the Roku 4K with its mm-hmm. 4K streaming capabilities. However, like I mentioned too, with that Samsung player, that is a 4K device with 4K streaming apps built into it. So if you had a TV that didn't have that, like, say, one of those P or M series TVs, the ability to do, say, 4K Amazon in particular,
right.
you could add that Blu-ray player and not only enjoy your ultra high def Blu-rays, but also some UHD streaming services that you might not have had initially. And the other thing I'm looking forward to, I've been looking at some of the reports, like specifically mm-hmm. one of the movies that you can look at in Dolby Vision and HDR10 would be the Mad Max Fury Road movie that came out. And
right.
you can do the Dolby Vision version through Vudu streaming, and the HDR10 is available, of course, on Blu-ray. And I would like to see if that dynamic metadata of the Dolby Vision version actually makes a difference in that movie. Mm-hmm. Because especially in the beginning of Mad Max, there's a sequence where he's running through tunnels and stuff trying to escape, and one of the main characters. And it is a little, it doesn't look as impressive as later on in the movie in some of the brighter sequences. And I'm wondering if that static luminance setting for UHD movies could be improved upon with a dynamic metadata system. So, like, say in the beginning of that movie, you could really lower the overall luminance of the picture since it was really dark with a couple of peak highlights. And then when you get out into the outdoor sequences where light, you know, all the light in the world, that's where I think you would see a difference between Dolby Vision versus HDR10 right now, especially
right.
with that intro sequence of that movie. And I'm just curious to see if anybody's actually noticed that. So that's something I will try to get together. It's a hard thing to test unless you had like a couple of LG OLEDs, you know,
mm-hmm.
then you could run them both simultaneously. And then, because that's currently one of the very few TVs where you can do Dolby Vision and HDR10 support in a single box. Sony and Samsung have decided HDR10 only, at least for the current year. So, no Dolby Vision love there. But anyway, just some good more improvements. Good more, yeah. Better improvements, better video, better support for those Vizio owners, man. And that's
me talk pretty someday.
Yeah,
it's
you
a good
know,
book about learning.
It is Friday.
Oh, my goodness. Joe emailed ask@avxl.com. Hey, Patrick and Robert, I live in an apartment and was considering buying a projector. I have about a $1,500 upfront budget and was considering BenQ's HT2050. Since I live in an apartment, I'm dealing with limited space. My question to you is, are there any solutions for wiring this thing into my home theater if I mount this on the ceiling? It would have to be behind my couch and basically in my kitchen by the time it's far enough away. Is this a lost cause? Should I give up and just save for a modern TV? Mine's an old 1080i LG plasma. I only need an HDMI run to the projector. I'm dipping into Robert's notes, not Joe's question. You need power to the projector and you need HDMI to the projector. And HDMI you could do wirelessly.
True. Totally.
You know, the wireless HDMI actually works really well. In the early days, you know, if you mounted it so you could walk between the AVR, like you would plug adapter A in the back of the AVR and adapter B went into the back of your projector, and if you walked between them, the signal or your television, and if you walked between them, the signal would cut out.
That's for the wireless systems I'm going to mention. That's still the case in the sense for 60 gigahertz technology. If you wrap your body around it. Yeah, that bag of water you are will block that signal. Are line of sight signals. They can bounce a little bit, but not like your lower frequency signals can. Like your 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz stuff. That's generally not used for this. But yeah, you're in a rental unit, so that opens up. You might not have access. If you had access to the ceiling where you could get up in there.
I ran power and HDMI to the ceiling for my projector.
That is, if you can at least get the power up there, that's the hard part. I've also seen somebody, too, where in a rental unit, they put the hole up there, but they were able just to drop an extension cord through it. And that's, I don't even know what the codes are related to that.
The codes are against that.
Yeah, but it was also something that they could fix eventually, too. Right. So it's the fact that you're not in...
Probably the simplest, it's... The problem is you basically need to run power from the floor up the wall across the ceiling to the projector.
Now, there is stick-on trim that will cover that wire, and it works really well. And when you pull that off, you could just paint over probably where it's going to pull your paint off the wall because it is pretty. It's like double-stick foam tape on one side and then a snap closed enclosure that hides cables. It won't look as pretty as doing it in the ceiling itself, but you could run a track up up the wall or right to the projector that camouflages the power and the video. And it wouldn't have to be it'd be maybe an inch wide. And if you use something like those Monoprice Redmire cables that are ultra thin, depending on the distance you got to go, that would be one way to do it. You could also use something like an HDMI extender too, over, Balans and Ethernet.
The problem is you can go to a website like cableorganizer.com. They've got a pretty good collection of what Robert was describing, sort of cable covers and stuff like that. There's no good way.
I picked those up at my local Lowe's or Home Depot as well. They sell those in 5-foot strips.
Yeah, there's no elegant way to get power up the side of the wall and across the ceiling of the projector. The best you can do is make it blend in as much as possible. If your room you're putting in is small enough, you could put the projector on the back wall if there's power there and do the HDMI wire.
I have had people just simply use those command adhesive hooks too on the ceiling and then just drape the cable as best as you can to
It's
the
not as whiskey tango as disassembling refrigerators and cars in your front yard, but there's a low spousal acceptance factor to borrow a Lloyd case phrase.
The problem he ended up running into is the fact that the cable kind of hung down a little bit and the projector power cord itself wasn't very long, so it became a kind of a hazard in this room.
Well,
and
the other thing is projectors draw a lot of power. Right, so this is also an area where, you want to buy if you are putting, no matter where you are mounting a projector, you want to buy the expensive, really thick, you know, the highest gauge, or the, I should say the lowest gauge wire you can get in an extension cord.
It should be a similar gauge to whatever that cord is that's going into the projector.
Yeah, that $4 extension cord that's made out of 22-gauge wire.
It's like, remember the old school days back in the back
enjoy
in our
your
youth,
house fire.
Those really thin cable, those extension cords with the little ends that had like 8 plugs on the end, and you could plug them all in.
Yeah, don't do that.
9 times out of 10, the cable would just pop right off, and sparks would go flying everywhere.
Don't.
I remember those hazardous days of youth.
Yeah, buy the expensive extension cord, and as much as it pains me to say it, Joe, unless you can like rear wall mount that, or you can live with the emotional trauma of a giant cable running up your wall.
Make it look pretty too. I always think of whenever you're in like data centers and stuff, they always have a tray up above your head, running down corridors and stuff where all the cables get put up into. I mean, granted, you don't want. You're in a rental, and I'm describing industrial stuff. So, yeah, I think getting the projector out of the way is the best way to protect it.
Mm-hmm.
Put it where you need it, and then either just deal with, wire covers or just careful draping with plenty of length so you can keep everything out of the way so it doesn't get tripped on, especially if you're creating a dark room environment.
Right.
The horrible thing to have is the power going to the projector. You don't want to just kick that out accidentally because you could – you could overheat the lamp suddenly, or it doesn't cool down properly.
Yeah. And you hear that pinging noise.
It's just a safety issue, too. It's like, anyway.
Joe, this is probably not the answer you wanted, but it's the best one we got for you. Because we don't want you to light your house on fire or destroy your projector.
But we want it to look pretty.
We got one last one before we go. Kind of a short show today, but we'll make up for it by being like 3 hours long next week. By emails, I have an indoor antenna that works pretty well. However, there are a few times where the signal will break up as I move around. I'd like to get an amplifier for the antenna, but I'm not sure which one. I don't really want to buy a new antenna just to get one that's amplified. Any suggestions? Buy, if the signal is breaking up while you walk around, an amplifier is probably not going to help because you are the problem. Your body, your physical mass, that big old water bag that you are is great for absorbing HD signals. You need to relocate that antenna someplace where your path doesn't get between the antenna and the tower.
Great suggestion. I have this exact problem in my bedroom that I use one of those flat wall antennas with. You can get a wall antenna. I think it's $35. Amazon has like a knockoff brand of their own house brand that's anywhere from $15 to $25. Or they have an amplified version for like $35. I've never found an amplified antenna that has made a difference compared to the unamplified version.
Yeah,
it's more about placement and aiming. And in the case of those flat antennas, I find if you can put it flat on a wall as high as possible, and then also try it 90 degrees from that if you can on the wall right next to it, because one of those two positions is usually going to give you a better run the channel scan each time, so you see which one gives you better results and go from there. And beyond that,
there's not much you can do because in fact, amplified antennas can actually sometimes create problems that you don't see with normal antennas because they just get the signal strength pumped
totally.
Up.
Totally. And if you're dealing with long-distance reception issues as well, and I'll put a link to this in the show notes, but the folks over at Channelmaster have one of the best pages for, like, what is your scenario? Are you dealing with a bunch of stations coming from one direction, a couple stations from a couple directions, or whatever? Here are the options you have.
Like TV Fool, for example, they'll allow you, they have their TV signal locator where you type in your address. You know, here in the Bay Area where I am, there's like a bunch of antennas over on the other side of the bay in San Francisco, and if memory serves, there's a bunch of antennas behind me in the Oakland Hills.
And there's one or two stations in the South Bay that are just like, oh.
And that's about the worst case scenario, because the other thing is you have to be line of sight. So the South Bay ones usually get blocked, but the other thing you run into is if you're in Oklahoma, probably most of the antennas are in Oklahoma City. So,
however, the beauty of some of the Midwest is the flatness of the terrain compared to here in the Bay Area. We have some rolling hills and stuff where I live in a residential community, fairly no hills or anything around me per se. I get about 80 channels over the air.
That's crazy.
I take a 5-minute drive or 10-minute drive and go over this hill down to my client's house.
And you get like three.
We had one. It was like some channel we didn't even want. And so it's like, okay, this is just not happening here. So I think everyone should own one of those flat antennas too. Literally pick one up used for $10. It doesn't matter. It's a single connection, no power. Every TV, everything that's called a TV has a digital tuner in it. And there's free TV you can grab from the air that way. And including Olympic coverage on NBC if you're so fortunate to live near an NBC broadcast channel.
Oh, my goodness.
So, I love broadcast. And if you want to do DVRs and stuff like that with over-the-air content, we've talked about that a few times. So go scour our show notes at avxl.com. You know? Or do a Google. Google us, please.
Oh, my goodness.
Enable the Googles.
Hey, and thanks to everybody who contributes to patreon.com/... AVXL, you make this possible so we can, you know, not work on other things to feed ourselves and feed my children. We can work on this. So thank you to everybody that donates there. Next Saturday is going to be our first hangout. You should get an email about that if you are a contributor to AVXL.
Oh, I will be here.
Patreon.com. Oh.
Well, I can't say where I'm going to be, but.
Well, I'm going to change that date around and send you an email with that, ladies and gentlemen.
Any other weekend besides next weekend.
Okay. Well, maybe the weekend after that. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Patrick Norton.
And I'm Robert Herron.
We'll see you next week on AVXL.